Well, good morning, everyone. I have a very blessed life by world standards, and I know this because I have enough to eat every day, and I live in a house that has four walls, in fact, more than four walls, luxury. We have running water in our house. We have a flushing toilet. I have a job. I have four children. In some places, some parts of the world, people are disappointed for me because I've got four daughters. I don't have any sons. But no, I assure them that no, daughters are indeed a blessing. I work in a huge worldwide organisation that does a whole lot of good for lots of people. I live in Sydney, but get this, my commute is less than 60 seconds. But then I turn to Matthew chapter 5, which is on page 1454, if you want to follow along, and I find that the blessed life is not the blessed life that we think of. When Jesus sits down to teach his disciples, he starts his teaching, which we're going to be following along with up until about Easter here at CCM. He starts his teaching with this series of statements about who is blessed. Now, this is the standard way that the Old Testament talks. So Job chapter 5, there's a line, "Blessed is the man whom God corrects." The first word of the book of Psalms is blessed. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly. That's Psalm 1, verse 1. The Greek word for blessed is makarios, and the Latin word is beatus, from which we get beatitudes. So these are sometimes called the beatitudes. If you've heard that, that's why. One of my lecturers felt that the best translation for this this phrase, this expression, was, "How good is it? How good is it when God corrects you?" That's Job chapter 5, verse 17. Or, as I was just saying, "I am blessed to live in Sydney. How good is it to live in Sydney? How good is it to have four daughters and no sons? How good is it to have flushing toilets and air conditioning?" The Good News Bible, which is aiming for ease of reading, uses the word happy. And that starts to bring you into some issues, because Jesus, he applies this term to some really weird conditions. So, the Good News Bible's verse 4 says, "Happy are those who mourn." Now, those who mourn are many things, but they are definitely not happy. It's just not true, is it? And so if we go into this passage expecting blessing to look like happiness, then we do find that it is all upside down. We could come up with all kinds of statements of the good life in Australia. How good it is to have all the spiritual resources that you need within yourself. How good it is to avoid sorrow and pain. How good it is to stick up for yourself and get your way. How good it is to have learned to accept yourself as flawed and imperfect. How good it is to get justice. How good it is to watch a movie or a TV show where it doesn't have a boring hero who's all dull and goody-two-shoes, but someone who's kind of morally problematic and a bit compelling and interesting and philosophically stimulating, some kind of anti-hero who's all shades of grey. How good it is to be the stirrers and the agitators and the activists. How good it is if we could arrange our society so that people never have to have their beliefs seriously challenged or their feelings hurt. Now, those aren't the exact opposite of what Jesus says, but they're pretty close sometimes. Many of them are good in themselves, and they just go to show how crazy these statements are that Jesus is making. So why does he say them? Well, the reason is in every line. It's in that word "for." For, because. Blessed are the poor in spirit because theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The meaning of these bizarre statements about blessedness, the upside downness of them, is all about the upside downness of the kingdom. So there are eight statements, general statements. Blessed is the person who's like this. And then a final one that's pointed at the people hearing, pointed at us. Blessed are you. And the first and the last both say, something about the kingdom. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If the list starts and ends with the kingdom, I reckon that's a pretty good indication that this list is all about the kingdom, yeah? When you think about the kingdom, whose kingdom is it? This is not a hard question. It's God's kingdom. And when you think about blessing, when we say not just, oh, I've done well here, I've got lucky, when we say, I am blessed, who is doing the blessing? God is doing the blessing. So if it's God's kingdom and if God does the blessing, then it ought to make sense to talk about blessing in terms of the kingdom of God. Jesus is not being silly here. And yet, instead of it being sensible, it comes across as really upside down. And when you look at the list, the other thing to notice, part of what explains why this is such an upside down way of looking at it, is that the kingdom is coming. It's not quite here. Listen to the future tense in these verses, especially the word will keeps coming up again and again. Those who mourn will be comforted. The meek will inherit the earth. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness will be filled. The merciful will be shown mercy. The pure in heart will see God. The peacemakers will be called sons of God. The kingdom of heaven is a good outcome. It's a good future that certain people are heading for. When God is king, when his rule is fully felt, that'll be good. There'll be comfort. There'll be a handing out of inheritance. Justice will come. People will be filled with righteousness. Mercy will be shown. People will see God, and God will call people into his family. All of that is great. All of that is blessing. And there's a sense of then, but not now, about what Jesus is saying. And yet he also says, theirs is the kingdom of heaven, as if the kingdom is something that is here now. I wonder if it's like a ticket. The kingdom that will come fully then is something we can possess now. Maybe we would say, blessed are those who have tickets to see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, for they will be entertained. The ticket itself is not that entertaining, right? It's just, as far as I'm aware, it's just a piece of paper. But it will get you into that blessed state of grace known as the Capitol Theatre. Blessed are those who will experience all happiness in there for a couple of hours. Blessed are those who will experience all happiness in the kingdom of heaven for a lot longer than a couple of hours. I can remember getting up early at uni, going into the box office just near university to queue for concert tickets. And when I got there, there were people who had slept there in the queue all night. Do we say, blessed are those who camp out rough on Parramatta Road? Not usually. But blessed are they because they got to see their God. Blessed are those who belong to the kingdom of heaven, those for whom God is already king, because when he comes as king, everything that they are longing for will have come, and they will welcome his reign with joy. And Jesus says that this blessed life is the costly one. It involves what are largely blessings then for people who are engaging in behaviours, who are exhibiting character qualities, who have a certain kind of relationship with God, now. So let's start with those who mourn. I have a friend who suffers crippling grief over the state of the environment. Now, if you're not particularly into the environment, think of another issue that you think is just a moral scandal. It might be to do with the number of women who, in desperation and a lack of any other kind of options, have an abortion every year in Australia. It might be about all of the thousands of children who therefore die every year in Australia. It might be the state of our Aboriginal brothers and sisters, the life that they are condemned to by the setup of our nation. And what are we going to do about that? And how would we rearrange that in a way that was fair and just and good? And I don't know. There are lots of things that cause us to mourn. Now, it's not because my friend, who is concerned about the environment, doesn't know the facts. He knows the facts. Oh my goodness, does he know the facts? And the facts are terrifying, and it would be better for his mental health if he could ignore them. A bit of compassion fatigue would be really good for him. And it's not because he doesn't trust God. Actually, the more he aligns himself with the good God who made the world, with the God who chose for every single unique species to exist, the more he loves and trusts that God, the more upset he is when one of those unique species vanishes. Not even because we're particularly cruel, but because we really weren't thinking about it. Because when we're thoughtless, these things just happen. But the created world is a good thing. It's a work of God, and it's right for him to mourn it. And Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn. My friend is blessed to be in mourning because he will be comforted when the kingdom comes. Now, there's a lot of mourning in our world for good things. And the temptation is to set that aside and go, I need to get over that. I need to be stronger so that I can survive in the world. But Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I don't think it's that often that I have to choose between eating and being righteous. I don't think I've ever had to choose between justice and a drink of water. Sometimes I'm asked to choose between two different kinds of coffee. There's sort of the just one and the unjust one. Sometimes I am asked to vote depending on how much money I'm going to make under a given policy. We get that, don't we? There's an election coming up in New South Wales, and lots of the policies will be about what we can get out of them. They won't be about whether the morals of one policy or the other are good or bad. They'll just be about, well, how much cash are you going to make? But Jesus says, in fact, Jesus is talking to people who were often hungry and thirsty. People who weren't in control of their lives, who didn't have a whole lot of choices compared to us. And when they were left wanting righteousness, when they wanted justice, when they felt the sin in their community and in their lives, like an ache in the guts, like a headache, like a dry throat, Jesus said to them, that's when you're blessed. Not because it's great to hunger and thirst after righteousness, but because you will be filled. Hunger and thirst are not fun, but you will be filled when the kingdom comes. Because Jesus says God is doing something. The kingdom of heaven is coming. And how good it is to belong to the kingdom of heaven. Because God is doing something, start developing a taste for that now, so that when it comes, you can enjoy it then. But of course, because God is doing something, that means that our world is the sort of world that needs something done. And so longing for the kingdom, looking forward to the kingdom, living in the kingdom is costly now in our world. The kingdom of heaven belongs to those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Now, on Thursday morning, we were looking at this passage in our Bible study group, and I suggested, well, look, we might pray that God would make us more merciful or more pure in heart. Those sound like okay things to pray for. We might even pray for meekness. It's a little bit countercultural, but I could probably be convinced to pray that God would make me more meek. I think I'd take a lot of convincing to pray for persecution. I don't really want to pray for persecution. Did Jesus really mean that? And so then I read the next verse, and it turns out Jesus really did mean that. In fact, he then aims the next verse at you, the listener. Not some abstract person, but the disciple who he's actually talking to. He says, blessed are you when, and he goes into detail, when people insult you, when people persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Let me pause and say with Peter, who wrote in 1 Peter, that you're blessed when they falsely say these things against you. Just being accused of bad things because you've done bad things, that's not good. But being falsely accused because of Jesus, what should I do then? I thought about my reaction to this sort of thing. Even like, you know, you'll get a story in the paper or on the ABC about how terrible Sydney Anglicans are, and I think, hang on, I'm a Sydney Anglican. Stop picking on me. I don't like it. I get indignant, it's not fair, it kind of stings, I get all angry, it's often not true, and I certainly don't want persecution to happen. I don't like being mistreated. I'll avoid it if I possibly can. And if I can't avoid it, then I complain. Ask my wife. I complain a lot. Jesus says, rejoice and be glad. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. Jesus says, actually, you know what? This is just typical of being God's person in a fallen world. In the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. If we cop a bit of trouble for Jesus, how good is it? Well, not very. It's not very good at all, actually, Jesus. And he says, well, yeah, that's true. It's not very good. But it's the same not very good that all of God's prophets have copped, from Abel to Zechariah. And how good is it to be like them? Because their reward is great in heaven. So the life blessed by God is going to look to us like it's not the blessed life. The blessed life has costs. And the costs of being blessed come from identifying with Jesus. When we put all the costs together, all the things that Jesus says a blessed life looks like, the picture that emerges is really, I think it's a picture of Jesus. Blessed is the one who is poor in spirit, who mourns, who is meek, who hungers and thirsts for righteousness, who is merciful, who is pure in heart, who makes peace, who was persecuted because of righteousness. That's Jesus. Jesus was poor in spirit. Though he was rich, he became poor for our sakes. Although he was in very nature God, he became a servant and a criminal for us. He exhausted himself. You find again and again in the Gospels, he goes away early in the morning to pray so that he can face a day of ministry. Jesus mourned. He went to the grave of his friend Lazarus and he kind of snorts and weeps. Must have been very messy. He got to Jerusalem and he looked at it and he cried, knowing how the people were opposed to him. Not crying because they were going to pick on him, but crying because of what it meant for them and their fate. Jesus was meek. This is someone who could command evil spirits and crazy, screaming, chain-breaking lunatics. He could even tell the wind and the waves what to do. But in the Gospels, you hardly ever see Jesus raise his voice. He operated by going around and teaching and reminding people and persuading people and bringing out the truth and putting it before them. He didn't throw his weight around. Jesus was hungry and thirsty for righteousness. There's a stage where the disciples have come back from trying to find lunch, and he says to them, I have food to eat you don't know anything about. And they go, well, there's only 12 of us. Where'd you get food from? Maybe he had food that he didn't tell us about. And he says, no, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. Jesus says that he was sustained by doing the right thing. He hungered and thirsted for righteousness. Jesus was merciful. He healed everyone, Jew or Gentile, good or bad, noisy, horrible men, loose women. He healed and he forgave. He preached forgiveness to everyone. If you're not happy with your life, and if you've worked out that's probably a good indication that since God's standards are higher than mine, well, probably God's not happy with your life either. Then Jesus preaches forgiveness for you. And Jesus was pure in heart. Even his enemies, even as he raged against their hypocrisy and their sin, even as he hated evil, he forgave sin. He chose God's will before his own. He loved everyone. And he made peace. If you need peace with God, well, guess who died to make peace with God for you? And we know how Jesus ended up on the cross, because Jesus was persecuted because of righteousness. God blessed Jesus with new resurrected life. So the kingdom, I keep saying it's then, and we're waiting now for the kingdom that's going to come then. Actually, Jesus got to then. He was resurrected. He was raised to new life. God gave him that new kingdom life. And so we can rejoice and be glad because the blessed life that Jesus was talking about is not some ideal thing that will happen one day. It's something that has already happened. That a man has lived this life and has shown us all that it really exists. Identifying with Jesus means being like that. It will mean mourning over the tragedies of our world. It will mean working to stay pure in heart. It will mean being merciful and making peace even when it costs us, even when it keeps us hungry and thirsty for justice because we haven't got justice for ourselves, but that we've brought peace. It will mean sticking up for Jesus and identifying with him even when that's going to cost us. Because God is doing something. Jesus' kingdom is coming, and how good it is to belong to Jesus. But Jesus lived a costly life to pay for his kingdom. And the more that we identify with him, the closer we are to him, the more we too will attract those same costs, the same outrage, the same mourning, the same hunger. We've had a lot of prime ministers lately, haven't we? And I don't know if you've noticed, before a prime minister falls, various senior ministers will kind of grumble about various things, about the state of the country and how they could be doing a better job. They kind of grumble in code. They don't want to come straight out and say, I think I'd be a better prime minister than that guy. But they kind of grumble between themselves. But then once there's a spill on, once suddenly the top job's open, well, then they have to actually run, don't they? They have to put up or shut up. Do they have enough votes? Could they become the leader? Could they survive if they don't become the leader? Because it matters whose side you're on. Once something starts to happen, it matters whose side you're on. Jesus' kingdom is coming. His life and his death and his resurrection all point to that. In fact, his resurrection says his kingdom has already come. Now, you can grumble and groan about the state of the world, but don't think that that means that God, at the end of it, will go, well, we do agree on a few things. I suppose we can work it out. No, you've got to be on Jesus' side. There are costs to choosing a side, but Jesus has already won. And how good it is to be on Jesus' side, to be on the winning side. So whose side are you on? The costs of being blessed come from identifying with Jesus. As you think about whether you've got a blessed life, certainly we can be thankful for all the good things that God gives us. But as we get to the Beatitudes, as we get to Jesus teaching us how to be good disciples, the very first thing that he starts to say is, this is what the real blessed life looks like. The kingdom that's coming is upside down. How close are you going to identify with Jesus? Whose side are you going to be on?